Joining us now, she's now teaching former professional tour player, Victoria Elizabeth. Welcome into the show.
Good morning, guys. Thank you for having me.
Well, this is that time of year. We've spent some of the morning talking about stage three of Q School, and this is that time of year when we see a lot of our friends on the tours, young players who had struggled through and maybe were journeymen to some extent, retiring. I mean, Teresa O'Hara, TKO, announced her retirement earlier, and we've had several players at this time of year announce their retirement. Can you take us through that, the mindset of making that kind of a shift from being a professional athlete into whatever you're going to transition to next? What goes into it? Is it a diminishing return that you're discovering? Is it just too expensive to maintain? And in your case, why you decided to try instruction?
Well, I think it really varies for everybody. Obviously, it's no secret that golf is a really expensive sport. And I would say the average just playing a year on tour can cost anywhere from $40,000 to $80,000, depending on which tour you're traveling on, where you're traveling, how many tournaments you're playing, and whether or not you have a full-time caddy. So it does get quite expensive. And then I'd say also, for the most part, many of these women have been playing for their whole entire lives. So, when you think about putting 10-plus years straight of, 8 hours a day of practice and playing and working out and traveling 25 to 35 weeks a year, I mean, it really does wear on you. As far as my decision, a lot went into it. I played professionally for 8 years, and I never officially announced my retirement. I kind of go back and forth. The things that I miss most about playing are actually just interacting with the fans and sponsors. I don't really miss the act of playing competitively as much, but who knows? I haven't fully ruled it out. I'm only 25, but, I actually started when I retired. I called a couple of my sponsors, and the first sponsor that I called offered me a job. So that worked out pretty well for me. I moved back to my home state of Ohio from Florida, where I was living, and quickly discovered that cold calling is not my favorite thing in the world. So I was fortunate enough to have an opportunity with Topgolf, and I had never even really considered teaching. I've been involved in programs like the First Tee, and really enjoyed that because I'm very passionate about children. But I didn't think I was going to love it so much. And so now I'm just kind of getting my feet on the ground and learning as much as I can about teaching. And I will say, for the most part, at Topgolf, I think that it's, one, awesome for the game of golf, because the majority of the people that I meet and teach, you would never find at a real golf course because it's just too intimidating for them. But that's been a challenge for me, obviously. From a young age, having some of the best instruction in the world and being a very technical, analytical person, how do I find a way to communicate to someone who, has never played golf before how to do something or feel something? So I really enjoy it. It keeps me on my toes.
Yeah, so elaborate on what you miss more than anything. I mean, obviously, it was a decision that, just didn't come to you all of a sudden, one morning sipping coffee. But, when you make that transition, is there a part of you that maybe wishes a month later that you wanted to go back? Or is it something that may develop over time and the competitive juices may come back and you play in some local stuff or maybe you get an invite to go play somewhere, and then all of a sudden a switch kicks on and says, hey, I want to go back and be competitive again. I want to go back and do that again.
I will definitely say there are times that I do think that, but then I start practicing and I realize my life is a lot less stressful now that I'm not playing. But I don't know if you guys know, but I battled a thumb injury for quite a few years, and it got to the point where it was really, really bad. In the last few seasons that I played, I had to take 3+ months off after the season ended before I went to Q School, and thankfully was able to regain my card every year. But the last year, which was 2015, I think, that I went to Q School. So last year was my last year playing. I wasn't able to play for 3 months going into Q School, and I only started practicing 2 days before the week of Q school started. So I didn't have a lot of practice, and going into the final round, I think I was tied for third. And, you know, I have high expectations of myself, but obviously, and everyone says Q school is a different animal. It really truly is. But final round, I had a little bit of a rough day and ended up missing my full card by one. I still got into quite a lot of events last year, but that was kind of when I had to take a look in the mirror and, you know, make the decision of do I want to continue to play or not. And playing golf wasn't always my decision. So I think for me it was very empowering, kind of taking control of my life and what I want to do. And I thought I was done with golf for good. Like, I wasn't going to teach, I wasn't going to be in the golf industry, nothing. And, you know, there was just something that kept pulling me back. And then I started to really enjoy playing and practicing. And I really have a renewed love and respect for the game of golf.
Well, and Victoria, it's no secret to those of us who know you and know your story, and you intimated it in just a second ago, that, you know, you were one of those junior golfers that was under tremendous pressure. You started when you were very, very young. Your family moved from Ohio to Florida so you guys could play more often. And now you have an opportunity through Top Golf and through some of the things you do as an ambassador for the sport, and like you say, dealing with young kids. I mean, tell us a little bit, give us sort of the short version of your story in junior golf, and then maybe some of the pitfalls that you would like our listeners and their children and grandchildren to avoid.
Okay, yeah. So without getting too deep into it or too dark, you know, I grew up in a very abusive household. My father was very physically and verbally abusive, and he actually moved us to Florida to kind of isolate us and used golf as a guise for that. But, you know, I had a lot of opportunities with golf and got really good really quickly and managed to qualify for the Symetra Tour when I was 16. So after that, and I was ranked third in the world in the Golf Week junior rankings. But after that, I wasn't allowed to do school. I wasn't allowed to talk to college coaches. And it was always my dream to play college golf. Because I had other life ambitions as a 16-year-old. Looking back, I'm really thankful that everything happened the way that it did, because obviously it's provided me incredible opportunities in life. But my advice to any parents or junior golfers out there would just be to set some realistic goals, short-term, long-term. Figure out if, you know, your children want to pursue golf just for fun, if they want to play college golf, or if they want to play professional golf, because there's different approaches to each of those. I've seen way too often, I mean, so many girls that I used to play junior golf with that were really, really good that don't even touch a golf club because they were burnout. And, you know, it's very rare. I have one student that I work with that he wants to go and practice and play, and he wants his parents to send him to a golf school. And if he goes more than a day or two without playing, he starts bugging his parents. But I would say that that's pretty rare. So just finding a balance, making it fun, and also, you know, kids need a little push every now and again. But just, you know, as long as you keep your goals, you know, whether it's, like I said, fun, college or professional, in mind, and figure out a way to approach that, then you're going to be just fine.
Yeah, where does that line fall between having fun with something and giving that push? I mean, I'm a golfer. I've played golf all my life. I have a 15-month-old now. And, you know, people always say, oh, you know, when are you going to get him a golf club? When's he going to start playing? Well, that's really not going to be my choice, in my opinion. It's going to be whatever he wants to play, he wants to play. But I'm also of the opinion that if you want to play something, you know, not necessarily as a five-year-old, but maybe as a teenager, if you want to play something, then at some point you have to get serious about it. So where is that fine line?
I would say it really just depends. I think golf is great to start, I mean, when kids are babies. As soon as they could walk, that's when I started picking up a golf club. I also played tennis, which I highly recommend, especially for young children, building hand-eye and strength. It's very relatable to golf. I actually play a lot of tennis now. I play on two teams, so that's where I'm getting my competitive juices fed. So I don't know. There really is such a fine line between forcing and having fun. And I think it varies based on the person. But I think one of the things that I will say is find a good golf coach. obviously golf's expensive, but if you want your kids to get better and you want them to enjoy it and have fun, it's always good to have something to work on. Same as if you're an adult. You know, that's one of the things that I can't stress enough is having meaningful practice. They always say practice like you play and play like you practice. And it's true. And if you don't know what to practice, you know, little things like rhythm or grip or stance, then go and take a lesson. Or you could look online. That's a little bit of a slippery slope. But if you're going to look online, look at Ben Hogan videos.
That's a good place to start. Well, we're talking to our good friend Victoria Elizabeth, and I'm curious, now that the joy is back to some extent, and I mean you're invited to play in the Gary Player Invitationals, you just got back from South Africa, all of these opportunities didn't come to you by accident, and in part it's because you're an ambassador for the game and because you're good with sponsors and you're good with people. Is that something that, you know, that golf helps with? I mean, do you think that for young kids who need to learn to have a firm handshake and look people in the eye, that golf is a good place to pick up some of those skills as well?
Absolutely. I mean, and you look at programs like the First Tee, and that's what they teach. I have been very fortunate. And just talking about Gary Player for a second, you know, when you think of golf, the big three you think of are Gary, Arnold Palmer, and Jack Nicklaus. But what Gary Player is doing with his Gary Player International is just really, really amazing. They've raised over $65 million, and their goal is by the end of 2020 to raise $100 million for a charity that goes towards education of underprivileged children. So it's so awesome to be a part of that. I mean, really in line with some of the things that, you know, are most important to me. I've had so many wonderful opportunities, and golf has definitely provided that. I think, you know, no matter what I've been through, it's kept me grounded. And, you know, it's a game of integrity. It makes you kind of look yourself in the mirror, and you have no one else to blame on the golf course but yourself. So that's one of the great things about it, is that it really is in your hands, and you can make a way to make golf fun is go on the golf course and say you have, like, 100 yards, and that would normally be, you know, a pitching wedge. Well, try hitting like a 4-iron. See how close you can get a 4-iron. Just do things like that. Hit shots. Make it fun, because you can hit any club you want, and I think that's really, really cool.
All right. So before we let you go, you know, talking about the teaching and Topgolf and you know, dealing with people that may have never, you know, experience the game or maybe not even thought about, you know, working or practicing, you know, going to Topgolf and having the opportunity to work with them. What's the questions that you get asked by these introductory people to golf that they want to know about the game?
Oh, my goodness. Well, one, lingo, for sure. What's a bogey? What's a par? And then I start talking. I'm like, well, get in your stance. No one knows what stance is. So I'm talking, you have to start from, like, ground level here. Like, it's so most of the things that I work on are just basic. So grip, a good way to check is the V's that your thumbs create, or little lines that your thumbs create when you put your hands on your grip. You want those both pointed towards your back shoulder. So if you're right-handed, you want it pointed towards your right shoulder. So that's a good gauge. And then feet should be just a little wider than shoulder width apart, little flex in your knees. And then I like to make it as simple as possible. Just think about taking the club almost kind of straight back and then turning your left shoulder under your chin, and then rotating your whole body through, and then a balanced finish.
Well, so, and the best thing about
in theory, golf is not that hard. It's not like the ball is moving, but, you know, any of those of us who have played know just how hard it is.
And the good news about Top Golf is pretty much 75% of the time when you hit a golf ball out into that range, it's gonna
find a target.
It's gonna find a target that's gonna light up, or you're gonna get some points, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Well, Victoria, man, we always appreciate you coming on and talking to us, and good luck with the teaching. And you know what? Maybe we'll see you back out there giving it the grind one more time.
All right, guys. Sounds great. Thank you so much for having me.